there's a few items from the news from this week I think it would be worthwhile commenting on. And what I'd like to do is I'd like to divide it really into two halves. The first half, I'll just deal with some of the actual news items and not really make much in the way of comments, just bring you certain things that have occurred in the week, and there are quite a few of them. And the second half, what I'd like to do, again, the whole lot will only last less than half an hour, but the second part I want to do is the Queen's speech, because this Queen's speech really lays out very much the government plans. So if we go into some of the actual news items themselves, first the kind of social folder of things that have occurred. One thing that has in fact happened just in the newspaper this morning, it says schools are to fight the smacking ban. The Court of Appeal has granted teachers and parents of independent Christian schools leaves to appeal to the House of Lords against the ban on smacking pupils. So the fact that they've got leave to appeal doesn't mean to say they're actually going to go ahead and achieve anything, but at least there is a leave to appeal there. There's various other ones as well. Sniffer dogs apparently are being called in to fight drugs in schools. Sniffer dogs and scanners designed to use against terrorists are being used by police in swoops on schools to search for drugs. So that's from the 25th of this month. As far as the young people are concerned, it's interesting that they also had a meeting in this past week by the junk food chiefs. I mean, that's about the best description. And the title is Junk Food Chiefs Dish Out the Blame for Obesity. It says the junk and snack food industry washed its hands of any responsibility for rising obesity among children and adults yesterday, rejecting calls for tobacco-style health warnings or a ban on advertising foods to youngsters, giving evidence to a committee of MPs. Four of the most powerful food industry figures blamed uninformed parents, low-fat yogurts, fish and chip shops and Indian restaurants for obesity. So, you know, it is a problem, and they wouldn't go ahead and advertise unless it actually does some good. So obviously the advertising that they have certainly has a great deal to regular blame that can be attributed to that advertising. In the case of some world news items there, so again from this past week, the problems in Georgia now with the sacking really of Edward Shevardnadze, it almost looks as if the whole lot's coming to an end. In fact, it's not. Now, just to clarify, when I started talking about Georgia last time, apparently some were thinking, oh, that's Georgia over in America. I'm not talking about Georgia in America. And some people thought, oh, I'm talking about South Georgia down in near Antarctica. And I'm not talking about Georgia down in South Georgia in Antarctica. I'm talking about the nation of Georgia, which used to be part of the Soviet Union, which is just above Turkey, and which is just on the corner of the Mediterranean. But it's very, very significant because of the pipeline that's coming in. It's coming right through that area, and therefore this pipeline in fact delivers oil through Turkey into Europe, and is obviously significant. And this particular article, which this one is the 24th. Let's see, you know, on the 24th, right in the front page, it says, Uprising topples a Soviet survivor. And it says the resignation of Edward Shevardnadze, it says, came as it seemed that Georgia, an important Western ally in the region and where BP is building a $2 billion pipeline, might slide into civil war. In the early hours yesterday, rumours circulated that the government was ready to use tanks to crush the protests. And Mr. Shevardnadze warned protesters that if they did not vacate Parliament and the presidency, then he would clear them out by force. And what actually happened was that the army and the police went onto the demonstrators' sides, and he hadn't got enough power to go ahead and do what he threatened to do, so he had to step down. The army and the police basically forced the step down, because the army laid down their weapons, joined the protesters, and therefore the entire region is under a degree of change. But don't be fooled by it. Within that same article, that same paper rather, inside, when in the analysis, it says bloodless revolt could trigger a violent struggle. It says that the problem for Georgia, however, is that while Czechoslovakia had the charismatic Havel to act as its guide from dictatorship to democracy, Tbilisi has little but a fractured opposition. Now, when you're looking at Lech Wałęsa in Poland and how he basically, he was opposing the government for many, many years, and Havel again in Czechoslovakia and various of these other states, when the government fell, they simply took office, and therefore and people swept them into power, and therefore there was government, a continuation of government. The problem with Georgia is it's something like Romania. And Romania, when Ceausescu, wasn't it, he fell, he basically left a power vacuum, and there was absolute chaos in the country as a result of that, resulting in a clampdown and everything else, and there's a lot of bloodletting. It says here, it says, the possibility of a further collapse in law and order is immense in what is effectively a political vacuum that will be fought over by fractured opposition groups with no obvious national leader. It says the East European states that became most successful at becoming democracies in the early 90s were all led by former dissidents who had spent sometimes decades as underground leaders. So this is the problem within Georgia at the moment, and it is a crucial area, let us say, just above Turkey and Armenia, and really is a buffer to Russia. And that area, Edom, is certainly in the Turkish area, but it also probably spreads into the Georgian area as well. And it is going to be a crucial area, because down through that area, the northern and the eastern hordes will come into the final battle of Armageddon. That's what that is a crucial axial area that this will actually take place. Another area you need to keep an eye on is Taiwan still. Apparently there's been a vote over there. It says Taiwan's parliament last night approved legislation allowing the island to hold referendums on constitutional change. The move is a red rag to China, which threatened retaliation against its renegade province. And the legislation will allow Taiwan's leaders to push ahead with plans for a referendum on reforms in 2006. He also wants a vote on the island's name. So that is bubbling away over there, and eventually it'll mean that China will flex its muscles, and maybe over Taiwan, and that may well bring down the American power in that area. Again, it's a case of America at the moment is propping up the Taiwanese, but eventually that will go. Some of the reasons why that might well go is another article here, again from last week. It says the flu virus is the greatest bioterror threat of all. It says nature's ongoing experiments with influenza strains may be the greatest bioterror threat of all, with the world alarmingly unprepared for a global epidemic, researchers warn today. Another pandemic of the kind that killed up to 40 million people in 1918 is inevitable and could be imminent, according to a team from the Jude Children's Research Hospital in Memphis. So they reckon this thing is absolutely inevitable, that it will come eventually. And as I understand it, the 40 million that died in 1918, that was actually more than was killed in the First World War. So it was just after the First World War, and there were more people more people killed because of it. It says, if an influenza pandemic started tomorrow, we would not be able to head it off with vaccines because the production facilities available to produce them are grossly inadequate, says Professor Webster. So the world is, again, there's another area that we need to keep an eye on and realise that it's another area that the world is... The political situation can change if everyone is down with the flu. It can cause problems politically as well. Now, obviously, you can go across to other areas, but if you've got an area like China where they can use dictatorial measures to isolate people, whereas in something like the West, which is all freedom of movement, you can't. Some nations will succeed and some nations will not in that area. Now, as far as Europe is concerned, just a few items from that. There's been several parts regarding Europe within the last week within the paper. I think it was best for me to just plow my way through them. Britain expects to get its way on red lines. Red lines, it says here, red lines in the sand, basically. It says, despite the government's threat this week to veto the European Constitution, officials said Britain has enough allies to get its way on most issues, it says, are red lines. The 263-page draft constitution issued in July marks a leap in European integration. It creates a full-time EU president, a move seen by Tony Blair as a key victory for Britain. Now they're going for this key president, this EU president, and there is going to be a time when the powers, the 10 nations, are going to give their power to the beast. There's going to be some kind of a super president. And so again, this is a significant development. We need to realise that the actual power that this particular person will have at the moment is not that great. It'll just be a presiding role. But the indication is from Scripture is that we're seeing the 10 nations under some kind of threat, presumably terrorism. This is the most obvious one at the moment. Which will allow those 10 nations to give their power to the beast. And this particular individual, who will presumably be heading that particular office, will then prophetically come into his own. It's interesting, it says, the Pope has denounced the omission of any mention of God from the draft, and a group of Catholic countries, Ireland, Italy, Poland and Spain, are pressing for at least a mention of Christianity. We're seeing developments. This is not the Europe that we're looking at now. Is not the Europe that's going to be in the future. There's going to be something that brings down American power. There's going to be something that causes them to give their power to the beast. That causes them to ally themselves with the papacy. Now everything points prophetically to various miracles being done, which will give the legitimacy in the people's minds of the papacy role. Another one, Blair faces battle over EU defence. It says Tony Blair will come under pressure from France today to sign up to a new European defence arrangement outside NATO, which could increase transatlantic tensions between the European Union and the United States. It says Mr. Blair signed up to a Franco-German defence ambitions as a Berlin summit with Mr. Chirac and Gerhard Schroeder, the German Chancellor, in September, accepting the principle of an EU operational command separate from NATO. So he has already signed a certain amount, but he's dragging his feet in that sense. And the indication is that Britain is not going to be in that alliance. Another one from the 25th, it says Britain is ready to veto proposals for a new constitution for the European Union rather than give up vital national powers over the defence, foreign policy and taxation. The tougher stance was signalled by the government last night after talks at Lancaster House between Tony Blair and President Jacques Chirac of France failed to resolve deep differences over the possible European defence capability. So that does seem to be a sticking point. It says EU redraft robs Britain of foreign policy veto. A change of wording in the latest draft of the European Constitution, published yesterday, let's see, that one that we had there was the 25th, this is the 27th, would strip Britain of its veto in all areas of foreign policy. So the idea that Britain can veto it, it's not going to be able to. Ignoring warnings that the government is prepared to veto the text unless major changes are made, legal experts in Brussels and Rome have stepped up the pressure on Britain and offered little beyond declaratory gestures in the fields of taxation, social security, criminal justice and energy policies. Another one, just in today's paper, it says Britain is in secret EU arms deal. Britain has taken a dramatic step towards a fully fledged European army, signing up to Franco-German proposals for a planning headquarters outside NATO. It emerged yesterday. The deal reached by British, German and French officials in secret talks in Berlin this week establishes an operational command in Brussels, allowing the EU to run day-to-day battlefield missions for the first time. So at the beginning of the week, it's talking about how Britain's going to be resisting it. Blair faces battle over EU defence. That's on the 22nd, I'm sorry. And then today, they've actually signed. So, you know, the things that are going on behind the scenes are really what is important. And we don't see those. But we see them. We see the result when it suddenly comes out. That is pretty evident. that there is somebody who, at the beginning of the week, is saying one thing, at the end of the week, you find that there's other plans. You know, that didn't happen in a vacuum. That was designed. They're putting out a word saying, oh, we're resisting any kind of signing up of European Defence Force. And then at the end of the week, oh, we've already signed. Now, this is what we need to be aware of, that we do not believe what these people are saying, and I'll come on to that when we're looking at the Queen's speech. Another one, power struggle, this is again from today, threatens new constitution. The European Union's big and small nations clashed over the new constitution yesterday as the ambitious project faced collapse. Foreign ministers had hoped to settle the bulk of the 263-page text in Naples this weekend, leaving a handful of intractable disputes to EU leaders in a summit in Brussels next month. But the problems are piling up on every front as 25 current and future states dig in their heels to defend the red lines. So you can see very clearly that the idea of having a veto is going to have to be scotched. You cannot have the number of people, a number of nations within the EU as it looks at the moment with a veto. It just isn't going to be practical. And they're going to realise that. And once you do that, then whatever Britain does, it either gets out of the EU completely or it gets dragged along into a super state. And that's the direction in which it's going. And one of the things that's going to really force this, I'm almost certain of it, again, looking at the things as it stands now, and again, remember that we're looking at things in the news right now that have been brewing for hundreds and thousands, quite frankly, thousands of years. And the Muslim faith came up, 1,500 years ago. And it almost seems tailored for what we're looking at today. We're looking at the end results of this faith. And it says, in the areas of terrorism, it says, bomb find adds to the threat that shrouded festival. It says, bunting fluttered over a square normally used by the public beheadings, and a man riding a pantomime horse cavorted among the troops of dancers and firecrackers popped. But Prince Sultan bin Abdul Aziz, the Saudi defense minister, sat on a golden throne. Ranged along him were scores of princes and dignitaries, and Saudis were celebrating the festival of Eid al-Fitr, I think it is, yesterday after the new moon was sighted over the Grand Mosque of Mecca. The Muslims from Morocco to Indonesia joined this joyful feast, breaking the fast at the end of Ramadan. It says Prince Sultan and his colleagues were ringed by dozens of bodyguards. A few hours earlier, police had fought a gun battle with militants close to the Riyadh. Two suspected terrorists were killed, one blew himself up while running towards the security forces, and another four managed to escape. So they're facing that down in Saudi. How long the Saudi regime can actually continue, it's debatable. We just don't know. It's interesting that the race report team toned to change the findings on Muslims, and there's a picture here of gravestones that have been defaced by swastikas. This is in Germany, a cemetery in Germany. These are Jewish gravestones. Researchers who found that young Muslims were to blame for many attacks on Jews were told several times by the European Union to change their conclusions, they said yesterday, because we can't say things like that. The change helped fuel a furious row between the two sides as they traded accusations of bias, incompetence and lying. And the Anti-Semitism Research Institute of Berlin's Technical University was asked last year by the EU's anti-racism body to examine the increase in attack against Jews across Europe. And they said, look, the problem is Muslims. They said, no, you can't say that. So, you know, why have a commission in that sense? 22nd, early on in this particular week, it says Britain's on a worldwide bomb alert. And this is after the Turkish bomb. It says Admiral Sir John Alan West, the first Sea Lord, said, "It's not a question of if, it's a question of when. I cannot imagine that there will not be an event in the UK." And that is what we've got to be aware of, that there are going to be attacks within the UK. And the same day, inside the paper, that was on the front page, inside the paper, it says, police and MI5 believe, it's on a headline that says, sleeper cells pose the threat to Britain. Police and MI5 believe that the terrorists have tried to attack targets in this country, but have so far been thwarted. In February, troops and tanks were sent to Heathrow Airport after intelligence that an attempt was to be made to shoot down a plane with a surface-to-air missile. Well, I can tell you this much, that MI5 and police and so on, the chances are they're not going to tell you of all the threats that there have been and there are currently. And the chances are that they've had some very, very serious ones indeed that we know absolutely nothing whatsoever about, and they're not about to let the public know. And we've got to be aware of that. You know, these people do not let us know what is going on. It's interesting, President George Bush has come for some stick this week for saying that the God he worships is the same God that the Muslims worship. Freedom is the Almighty's gift to every person, he said during his visit to Britain. And I believe we worship the same God. He was answering a question that specifically asks if he thought Muslim worship the same as the Almighty, the Muslims worship the same Almighty that he does. And he certainly got into some stick over in the United States by the Christian right, who do not believe that is the case. And as it brings out there, you know, the God that is the Muslims, it says somewhere in this particular one, I noticed, you know, the Muslims believe that Jesus is a prophet, but they do not believe that he is a God. Now, if that is the criteria, then they ought to all make an alliance with Hindus, because they believe Jesus is a God. So is the Monkey King, so thousands of others as well, that they, you know, it is, Satan's deception is very, very large, and it's becoming more and more so as we go in towards the end time, and we do need to be aware of that. Now, if I can make a few comments, I haven't left myself half the time at all, but on the Queen's speech, I've got the entire Queen's speech here, anybody here that wants to go ahead and read it. I could even post it on the news on the website if you're interested. But it's interesting, and reading through the Queen's speech, it's interesting really what is being said in the Queen's speech and what is actually being said behind the scenes. It says, "My Lords and members of the House of Commons, my government will maintain its key commitment to economic stability and growth. This will enable my government to continue to deliver reforms to the public services, continue to focus on greater opportunity and social justice, enhance security and protection and constitutional reform." Sounds so wonderful. Basically, they're maintaining stability so they can hold on to power, if you want to condense it down. Give you another one. It says, "Delivering a world-class education system." This is flowing straight in. "World-class education system that enables individuals to achieve their full potential remains my government's main priority for Britain's future success. Educational reform will continue to raise standards in all schools. A bill will be introduced to enable more young people to benefit from higher education. Upfront tuition fees will be abolished for all full-time students, and a new office for fair access will assist those from disadvantaged backgrounds. Universities will be placed on a sound financial footing." Now that caused a furore, because quite frankly, what it really means is, you know, if you read between the lines in that, it's saying that we're introducing tuition fees, and it's tuition fees that really did catch the conscience or the ire of so many people, and these tuition fees were something that I left it behind. I must have left it upstairs at home. I thought I had a thing on tuition fees here, but it translates into tuition fees actually being brought in for the first time. The full tuition fee of 3,000, I think it's about £3,000 a year or something. Turn over to Isaiah 59. You find here where it says in verse 4, it says, "None calls for justice or any pleads for truth. They trust in vanity and speak lies. They conceive mischief and they bring forth iniquity." Down in verse 8 it says, "The way of peace they don't know. There's no judgment in their goings. They've made them crooked paths. Whoever goes therein shall not know peace." You're not going to get what they weren't looking for, because the pathways, the very wording of those two paragraphs is so devious and it is so crooked that, you know, how on earth can you go ahead and have peace in that? You're not going to get peace from there. It says, "Therefore judgment is far from us, neither does justice overtake us. We wait for light, but behold obscurity for brightness, and we walk in darkness." Because they're making it dark. They're not saying what they mean. They're saying what it sounds good. something that sounds good, but underneath they're trying to do something different. We grope for the wall like the blind. We grope as if we had no eyes. We stumble at noonday as if for night. We're in desolate places as dead men. And down in verse 13, in transgressing and lying against the eternal, departing away from our God, speaking oppression and revolt, conceiving and uttering from the heart words of falsehood, and judgment is turned away backwards, and justice stands afar off, for truth is fallen in the street, and equity cannot enter. Yes, truth fails, and he that departs from evil is made for himself a prey, or is accounted mad, as it says in my margin. And the Eternal saw it, and it displeased him that there was no judgment. And he saw that there was no man, and wondered if there was no intercessor. Therefore his arm brought salvation or rescue to him, and his righteousness, it sustained him. For he put on righteousness as a breastplate, and the helmet of salvation on his head, and put on the garment of vengeance for clothing, and was clad with zeal as a cloak. And it goes right on into verse 20, and the Redeemer shall come to Zion, and that must be the church. The church is right. And unto them that turn from transgression in Jacob, in other words, there are going to be some within Britain and America that will turn, says the Eternal. And as for me, this is my covenant with them. My spirit that is upon you, and my words which I put in your mouth, will not depart out of your mouth or the mouth of your seed, nor the mouth of your seed's seed to the Eternal, for henceforth and forever. Arise, shine, for your light is come, and the glory of the Eternal has risen upon you. Darkness that covers the earth, gross darkness the people, but the Eternal will arise upon you, and his glory shall be seen upon you, and the Gentiles will come to your light, and kings to the brightness of your rising. When the church rises, when Zion actually is put into the position of government, then what we're actually being taught today, where we've been taught by Mr. Armstrong, and the way that we've been taught through the church and from this book, that way will be implemented within the world, and people will say what they mean, whereas here people do not say what they mean at all. I'll just quote one or two areas here. Well, I'll concentrate on just one area, and it's only one paragraph. Just one paragraph in the entire Queen's speech, and this was, six pages of this particular Queen's speech, and it says, "My government will maintain its commitment to increased equality and social justice." Now, that sounds good, doesn't it? Increased equality and social justice. "By bringing forward legislation on the registration of civil partnerships between the same-sex couples." Now, that barely raised a whisper in the opposition. The opposition support them, because all, and the Liberal Democrats, I mean, they completely and totally support. Even the Daily Telegraph, "Gay couples should be equal under the law. The time has come to give homosexual couple some legal recognition." And that was from the Daily Telegraph, and that's their particular view. It's also being pushed, this particular subject is being pushed. There are articles that regularly appear in our newspapers, put forward by the DTI, the Department of Trade and Industry. And this particular one says, "Who writes the best reports in an office? Lesbians, gay men, bisexuals or heterosexuals?" In other words, it doesn't make any difference. Oh yes, it does. Writing the best report? Where, you know, what is it? What in fact happens? We've got to understand, when we read these things, when we see these problems, and really without going through all of this, it says Tories switch over legal rights for gay couples. It says the Queen's speech opening the new session of Parliament on Wednesday will include a commitment to introduce legislation to legalise private civil partnerships in England and Wales. The most far-reaching change to laws relating to homosexuality since gay sex was legalised in the 60s. Gay and lesbian couples in the long-term stable relationships will be able to register at a register office, benefiting from inheritance tax and the next of kin rights. In other words, they won't be given any distinction as far as marriage, in fact, will not be given this distinction at all. Another one here, it says, from the Daily Mail, it says, "The Labour kills off marriage. The word marriage is to be purged in the case of equality for homosexuals. References to it will be removed from government records and documents." Now notice, this is actually what they're planning. No, as I said to you, it said, "My government will maintain its commitment to increased equality and social justice." And it just brings it in, just a little tiny paragraph like that. What they're really going to do, the institution of marriage will effectively be swept aside from almost every role of the state, including benefits, taxation and immigration law. Now, if anybody was happened to be living together in a heterosexual relationship, they won't have the same, they will not have as many rights as people living together in a homosexual relationship. It could even be wiped off the future state records, statistics and census. The ban will be brought in with the gay marriage laws to be announced in the Queen's speech today. Instead of asking for marital status, official forms will refer to civil status, to include both married couples and gays. I hate the word gay. Sads. Sads is the real word. Because they basically cannot perform what they want to perform. And therefore they are sad. They're devious. The Department of Trade and Industry, which has devised the laws, said marriage would be dropped at every opportunity from state documents. This would allow them to allow SADs to adopt new civil partnerships without having to declare their sexuality. And their comment, Daily Mail comment, it says the institution of marriage, already under stress, will no longer be unique or even special. It will simply become more vulnerable. And yet again, Tony Blair, a man who flaunts his Christianity and who came to power promising support of the family, has deceived us, and the children will be the losers. And it is. That is exactly right. There are many, many comments here, and really I think what I would like to do, though, time is going on, if we just turn over to Romans 1, I just want to point out the stages within Romans 1 that is mentioned here. And we need to understand and we need to be aware of this, the fact that there's this deceptive paragraph within the Queen's speech that contains far, far more than it looks on the surface. But if you notice over in verse 16, it says, I am not ashamed of the gospel of Christ, the good news of Christ. And that's talking about the establishment of the government of God. For it's the power of God to salvation, to rescue of everyone that believes, to the Jew first and also to the Greek. For in this is the righteousness of God revealed from faith to faith, as it's written, the just shall live by faith. For the wrath of God is being revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men who suppress the truth in unrighteousness. In other words, this government of God, this gospel of God, that will come and eventually get rid of these people that are suppressing the truth. And this is doing just that. Because that which may be known of God is manifest in them, for God has shown it to them. For the invisible things of him from the creation of the world are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made, even his eternal power and Godhead, so that they are without excuse. These people are without excuse, but if you notice what then happens, it says, because that, when they knew God, or they had this awareness of God through what has been made, they didn't glorify him as God, nor were thankful, but became vain in their own imaginations. And their foolish heart was darkened. They elevated themselves. They put their own ideas above, they elevate themselves above everything. That's the first stage. And having elevated themselves, just professing themselves to be wise, they became fools. And changed the glory of the incorruptible God into an image made like a corruptible man and birds and four-footed beasts and creeping things. Therefore God also gave them to uncleanness through the lusts of their own hearts, the dishonor of their own bodies between themselves, who changed the truth of God into a lie, and worship and serve the creation more than the Creator that is blessed forever. In other words, they will look at the creation, and evolution is therefore prominent within our schools. And we're looking at a creation, and we don't give any regard to the intelligence that is there behind it. So the second stage really is to look at all the physical things. They look at the creation, they worship the creation, the physical, instead of having elevated themselves. Then it goes into the next stage in verse 26. For this cause, because they elevate themselves and then they look at the physical creation, God gave them to vile affections, for even the women change the natural use into that which is against nature. If they opened their eyes and minds and understood what was there in front of their faces, they would be sads. Anybody that did anything different from what in fact is natural. And likewise also the men, leaving the natural use of the women, burned in their lust towards one another, men with men working that which is unfitting, and receiving in themselves a recompense of the error which was fitting. In other words, AIDS is one of the recompenses that are fitting. So we're looking at homosexuality in that regard. And even as they did not like to retain God in their knowledge, God gave them over to a reprobate mind to do those things which are not proper. So here we then see, having gone into this area, into homosexuality, they then become, with a reprobate mind, they become a twisted mind, they are deviant. And having become deviant, you then go, being filled with all unrighteousness, porneia, wickedness, covetousness, maliciousness, envy, murder, debate, deceit, malignity, whisperers, all this whole stream of other deviant activity is there as well, and you find that within the governments, within the educational establishments, within the entertainment industry. Throughout the land, you find this twisted approach. And as I say, you look at one paragraph in the Queen's speech here, and the paragraph is deliberately designed to be deceptive. Every single paragraph, as you go through, you know, not every single paragraph, but so many of these paragraphs are deliberately deceptive, trying to put a gloss on it, trying to put spin onto it. I think it's a good... What I think I might do is I might post it on the website, and you can actually read that and see what I'm talking about in that regard.